Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman. Over the last number of months, we've been talking about the many and varied challenges manufacturing leaders face in the everyday operation of their factories. No matter what they're making, the goal is usually loss reduction and future sustainability. But there are a lot of moving parts and personalities to manage in this process, both on and off the factory floor. This week on the Make It Right podcast, my guest is Jan Beunder. He's a manufacturing consultant and plant manager who's addressed these challenges in factories around the world. He's held senior manufacturing and supply chain leadership positions in global fast-moving consumer goods companies in Europe, Asia Pacific, and the US, with several assignments as plant manager. Labor-employee relations have been a critical part of his job as he worked to turn around and improve total employee involvement and output. And he's here to share his insights on labor relations, the role of unions, and the interaction with employees and business leadership. So welcome, Jan. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thanks, Janet.
I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation. And when you talk about unions, and I think that's probably where we're going to focus, for decades, unions have played an important role in protecting and supporting employees around the world. How prevalent are they now in today's factories?
I think that's different from country to country and from region to region. If I look at, for example, Western Europe, most of the unions have moved into labor councils where you got a representation of employees from all different levels and functions meeting with company leadership on a monthly or more frequent basis. Again, if I look at Asia, the role of unions in developing countries is different from developed countries. They are basically, some of them 10, 20 years back, addressing things like security, fair pay and other things. Now, when I go to developed countries, there's quite a lot of difference there. I'm also looking at the situation in North America. Either they are mandated by state laws or they have been invited quite a long time by the employees itself. So again, the situation is complex and different. Some of the factories may have to deal with multiple unions, electricians, warehouse, transportation. So that makes the situation more different. Again, if I look at a place like Asia, where we also have for some countries, and I worked in Vietnam for quite a while, the labor relations and the union being managed by the government itself. So you get a more, call it stable and controlled environment there.
Okay, so overall, and I guess this is going to be a tough question given the variety of scenarios you've just painted, but what impact are they having on factories? Are they bolstering the success, or are companies running into union paralysis?
Okay, I'll focus most of the discussion on North America or developed countries. So let me first start with a positive note, and I'll come back on that one later on. Unions have played a very important role to achieve fair pay for employees and, of course, the safety and security. I think it's also important, and it continues to be an important role of the unions in developed countries as well, to hold companies accountable for safety, fair pay, the overall training of employees itself. And again, if I look at family-owned companies or privately-owned companies versus the companies which basically where you get a lot of things or profit everything else mandated by shareholders, there could be at some times a conflict there of interest where the union plays a positive role to make sure that the welfare of employees being looked after. Now, looking at what I've come across as well with unions is also unrealistic demands and inflexibility to accommodate changed work practices. Again, high performance organization, which operates in a different way than the traditional manufacturing environment. It impacts directly cost efficiency. And cost efficiency, I'm also looking at driving job security versus multitasking, for example, internal conflicts, especially where you got multiple unions on site. This can create conflicts between the different groups, including unions, and that's never healthy.
Yeah, I just want to interrupt here, because when you talk about multiple unions and some of those conflicts, can you just sort of tell me a story or paint a picture for us so we can understand how that would work? What is happening in a factory when you've got all these different unions and something goes wrong? Do things have to stop because you have to bring somebody else in from a different union to fix something? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, and I think for the majority of manufacturing, we try to drive a high-performance work system culture, which means multitasking as well. Now, when I look at simple tasks or simple task maintenance and a journey towards eliminating defects in the right organization, you get the operators playing a major role there. They're operating the equipment and observing the equipment on a daily basis. They're pride in their work. If they can fix the defects, the performance on the equipment. Now, what you get with, for example, an environment where you got a maintenance union and I call it workers' union, automatically it bars the workers from fixing defects or going into the equipment itself, maintain and improve it. Now, that's of course also costing lengthy delays when there's breakdowns in equipment happening. I've come across a situation where the operators know how to fix defects, but also clear jams and other things, and simply by mandated segregated union tasks, they're not allowed to go into the equipment. And I've come across, for example, night shifts where lines are going down for hours, and that causes a lot of frustrations with the employees, the workers itself. And at the same time, it's inefficient, as we get, for example, maintenance folks waiting until something goes wrong while they're sitting in the workshop. I mean, it's the traditional one, read the paper and drink coffee until we get a call from the lines.
But that's, yeah, so this is a huge cost to the manufacturer, right? Because they're paying people to sit around and do nothing because the line is down or because they haven't been called in to fix something.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, I've been in the traditional environment, I've been in the HPO environment where the operators are handling defects, and I'm not talking about regulatory ones like electrical device or whatever for which you need electricians, but where the operators have direct ownership for the equipment, the output, where we train them up to maintain and improve it, and the maintenance folks have the role of training people and conducting specialist tasks. We miss a lot of opportunities to reduce waste, and I've seen that up to 30% of production output in a traditional environment. And of course, it's the morale. If I look at, you know, the modern times there, where young employees don't want to be treated like, you know, mm-hmm. I just got to stand there and push a button. So yeah, it has a big impact, and of course, The loss of capacity and equipment automatically means that the company can't maximize the available capacity to improve output. And itself, it's a again, got a big cost impact.
Right. So what are some of the drastic measures that you've heard of that factories have actually taken in order to combat this problem or to even lessen the impact of unions?
I think when the company got a clear vision of how to turn things around, and I'm also talking about, you know, the involvement of operators, training people, and getting rid of some of the barriers, segregated union tasks are putting up. I've seen some of the companies on a national base or on a factory base taking measures either to, lock out employees, temporary shutdowns, or move to states or countries where there's a different environment there.
So you're saying they would actually completely shut down a factory and rebuild it somewhere else in order to stop that?
Yeah, I know. If I look, for example, at U.S., some of the companies, car manufacturers, well, if I look at Toyota, have made the decision to expand or start up new business in those states where union membership is not mandatory and where actually employees are getting a higher pay. So at a certain moment, a stand got to be made. I think the most important thing is that before it comes to that, the companies are actively engaging employees to turn business around and work practices. Right. Like I say, the unions are getting paid by the members, not the other way around. And I think the underestimate the role, the increased role employees have from setting direction for the unions and what's important for their own interest.
Jan Bjander has been my guest this week on the Make It Right podcast, sharing the labor and employee relations insights and experiences he's gained during a career as a senior manufacturing and supply chain leader in positions in Europe, Asia Pacific, and the U.S. We're going to continue our conversation next week when Jan will talk about how leadership and employees can push for engagement and change in union environments to improve total employee involvement and output. I hope you'll join us then. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening and sharing the Make It Right podcast.